Catskill.
Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruda. On today's show, bird flu has been confirmed at an Ulster County farm, and Governor Kathy Hochul is warning residents of New York State to make sure you're protecting yourself. We'll learn more. Dan Hoost is here from Sullivan County Government, as he is every Friday. There's been no legislature meeting this week, but there's plenty of news from Dan. Also, we'll talk to the New York Immigration Coalition about the impact of President Donald Trump's executive orders aimed at immigration policy. Major raids across the country, including New York City and in Greene County here in New York. And February is Black History Month. We'll talk to the E.B. Crawford Public Library about their events. And we'll profile local lawyer Sheila Duggan, who defended Leonard Peltier. First, the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Janine Herbst. Federal investigators have retrieved the cockpit voice and flight data recorders from the American Airlines jet that collided with an Army helicopter Wednesday night near Washington, D.C. 67 people died in the crash. NPR's Frank Langfitt has more.
The so-called black boxes, which are actually orange in color, will allow investigators to hear the final conversations in the cockpit before the two aircraft collided over the Potomac River. They'll also provide crucial data, including the altitude of the plane leading up to and at the time of the collision. Once investigators have the recorder from the Black Hawk helicopter, they'll have a better sense of the paths the aircraft took that led to the crash. Officials tell NPR that the Black Hawk was supposed to be flying no higher than 200 feet, while sources say it was flying at least 100 feet higher. Meanwhile, members of the crew of the American Airlines jet have been identified. They include First Officer Sam Lilly, a second-generation pilot who was engaged to be married. Lilly's father, Tim, wrote this on Facebook. "It hurts so bad, I can't even cry myself to sleep." Frank Langfitt, NPR News.
Among key and contentious confirmation hearings on Capitol Hill yesterday for President Trump's cabinet picks, Tulsi Gabbard as Director of National Intelligence. Some senators focused on the Army Reserve Lieutenant Colonel's previous comments, criticizing U.S. involvement abroad, especially in the Middle East, and that she met with ousted Syrian President Assad. Senator Mark Kelly.
So my big concerns with Colonel Gabbard is, you know, that she's contradicted our own intelligence community on Assad's use of chemical weapons against his own people. And then she also has this propensity to use information as if it's true when it comes from, you know, dictators like Putin and Assad in Syria.
Speaking there to NPR, Kelly says Gabbard is a patriot who served and cares about this country, but he says he doesn't feel she's up to this job. Stocks opened higher this morning as the Commerce Department reported a jump in personal spending last month. And Pierre Scott Horsley has more.
Personal spending jumped by 0.7% in December as Americans spent more on both goods and services. Personal income was also up during the month, but not as much. Many people dipped into savings or borrowed money to finance their additional spending. The already low personal savings rate fell further in December to 3.8%. The Commerce Department's inflation yardstick, which is closely watched by the Federal Reserve, shows prices in December were up 2.6% from a year ago. That's a slightly larger annual increase than the previous month. Asian stocks were mixed overnight, up in Tokyo but down in Seoul. Markets in Hong Kong and Shanghai remain closed for the Lunar New Year. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
And the Dow is up 32 points right now. You're listening to NPR News from Washington. NASA's two stranded astronauts got a change of scenery, stepping out for the first time together 260 miles above the Earth. NPR's Amy Held reports on the historic spacewalk outside the International Space Station.
Butch Wilmore and Sonny Williams' time aboard the orbiting lab was supposed to last about a week this summer. They're still there. For what's looking like a 10-month stay after their ride, the Boeing Starliner experienced leaks and other problems. So it's understandable they'd want to get out and stretch their legs. That's just what they did Thursday for 5.5 hours on their first joint spacewalk.
Sonny Williams works
on the removal.
Successfully removing a stubborn broken antenna, narrated by Mission Control.
Has been attempted to be removed on two previous.
Williams already performed a spacewalk earlier this month, but this, her ninth overall, broke a record for the most time spent on a spacewalk for any female astronaut. NASA says she and Wilmore will return to Earth by late March at the earliest aboard a SpaceX capsule. Amy Held, NPR News.
1,000 endangered sea turtles have been rescued in Florida. Officials with the state's Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission say the endangered reptiles were suffering because of a rare winter storm in the area that sent water temperatures plunging. The turtles' flippers were paralyzed and they couldn't come up for air, but the wind and currents carried their bodies ashore where they were rescued. Officials say it was among Florida's biggest cold water turtle rescues in the last 15 years. I'm Janine Herbst, and you're listening to NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Amazon Business, committed to being a digital purchasing solution for businesses so that growing the business is the main focus and not admin and paperwork. Learn about smart business buying at AmazonBusiness.com.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Dan Hoost is here, as he is every Friday, but first we want to tell you about avian flu that was found nearby in Ulster County. A flock of roughly 50 chickens and ducks on an Ulster County farm was struck by avian flu, resulting in the deaths of all but two birds. The Ulster County Department of Health confirmed the presence of the highly pathogenic avian influenza, also known as H5N1 or bird flu, at that farm. The New York State Department of Agriculture and Markets recommended euthanizing the remaining two birds to prevent the further spread of that flock. In that flock, the farm owners and veterinarian who visited the property are under surveillance by the Ulster County Department of Health for potential symptoms over the next 10 days. This case is part of a larger outbreak of avian influenza that began in the U.S. in early 2024, primarily impacting wild birds, farm birds, and dairy cows. While contact with infected birds puts individuals at risk of exposure, workers on dairy and poultry farms and culling operations are at the highest risk. In light of this, Governor Kathy Hochul says it's a good time to make sure you're protecting any birds you come into contact with, from backyard chickens to large-scale farms. From the New York Public News Network, WRVO's Jessica Kane has more.
Amy Barkley is a livestock specialist and one of Cornell's avian influenza experts. She also has her own poultry farm and says she worries about the recent spread of avian flu.
Honestly, any farm that has poultry, whether you're large-scale commercial, small-scale commercial like me, or backyard, if you have poultry, you are susceptible. And if those birds have access to the outdoors, they're even more susceptible.
Barkley says this is a high-risk time of year as we head into migration season. So she advises anyone who comes into contact with birds to practice biosecurity.
What we can control is transmitting the disease from one farm to another, from one homestead to another. And so we can take steps like changing our footwear in between visiting different facilities. We can even restrict ourselves from visiting facilities.
She also recommends keeping birds away from fields where wild geese may migrate and frequent. For average consumers, Barkley says, keep in mind the food supply is safe. And she says beyond that, there's not much they can do.
I would just say that if you have friends that have chickens, just don't go into the pens with them. Just do your part to help stop tracking things in. And that's really all that we can do as general consumers.
For WRVO News, I'm Jessica Kane.
And we're joined by Dan Hoost from Sullivan County Government here, who joins us every Friday with an update from Monticello. And one of the things we wanted to talk about today was bird flu awareness. No detected cases here in Sullivan County, but again, as you heard, it is spreading in the Northeast and throughout the country.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we're keeping a close eye on it through our Department of Public Health. We've been putting out some information on our social media page that Public Health has about it. I've been sharing it on our main one, too. We probably will have more to say about it today, too, maybe some sort of statement that our new public health director is working on, Dr. Jessie Moore. We're excited to have her. At this point, it's just urging caution, not any kind of panic or alarm that we're trying to raise at this point. We just posted, actually, there are two forms of avian influenza. I didn't realize this myself. There's the low, and I'm going to try saying this, pathogenicity Hey, I think I got that.
You got that.
Mostly harmless, and infected chickens will react with general flu or COVID-like symptoms, but they won't necessarily pass away from it. And then there's high pathogenicity, which is the one that we've been talking about, in Ulster County.
Yeah, H5N1.
Extremely contagious and kills approximately 90% of all chickens that catch the disease. Of course, the concern beyond that is that it can jump into humans, specifically humans who deal closely with chickens. So we want people to be very conscious if they have a flock, whether it's domestic or part domestic or wild or whatever, of birds in their area. If they start noticing any kind of flu-like disease, give a call to our public health office and let us know about it, because we want to know about whether it's low or high pathogenicity, because we need to determine that. You will not be able to figure it out on your own. There are also precautions that you can take to help avoid the spread. And, of course, if you see it in your birds, it's very likely we are going to have to dispatch them, unfortunately, because we got to take all measures to keep this from spreading.
Which is that action they took in Ulster County this week. Mm-hmm. You also wanted to mention some free health kits. Speaking of public health has some free health kits, and you say more kinds than you realize. Yeah. What kinds of health kits are there?
This was really interesting to me because they posted this on our public health Facebook page this week. I was like, I didn't know we had all of that. It is kits that are free to anybody who wants them, and we'll send them to you. You can call our public health to get safe sex kits, like things with condoms and stuff, mental health kits, men and women's health kits, which I'm not exactly sure what are in those health kits, but it actually is material that is specific to whether you're male or female, adult mental health kits, children's mental health kits, tick removal kits, outdoor emergency preparation kits, hygiene kits, wound care kits, Narcan kits, and I love how they put this, respiratory etiquette kits, which I assume are like masks.
What is that, like a handkerchief?
Right? So you can contact Public Health, 845-292-5910. That's 292-5910. And we can arrange for you to get any or all of these free health kits.
So in the kits, and you said you may not know exactly what's in each one of them, but there's some supplies in there, not just like instructions and things, right? So this could be something if you wanted to have like an emergency to-go kit type thing in your car or at your house, you could get this from Public Health for free.
Yes, these free kits, they go beyond just first aid. In fact, in many ways, they're far beyond first aid. And I'm interested in, I'm probably going to talk to them at some point and say, let me know about each of these kits. What does each one contain? And maybe we should do posts about each individual one, videos of how to use them. Like I said, I had no idea, and I'm the communications director for the county, that we had all this. But what a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, and you're always learning, though.
I know, aren't I?
Well, this is good. No, it's good news. You'll have to come back and tell us more about those, because some of these things, like when you think about the spring coming up, tick season, and having a tick kit ready to go, it's probably a good idea.
Say that three times fast. A tick kit, right? Yeah, boy, that'll get us in trouble.
Let's talk about some of the other events that are going on. There was no legislative meeting yesterday. That was part of the scheduling. There's a new regular meeting coming up next Thursday.
Yes, legislators have finally settled on the schedule of meetings for the rest of the year, and it's going to be the usual, typically first three Thursdays of the month. Meetings have moved around a little bit for the committees, so what was on the first Thursday and the second Thursday might change a little bit. The third Thursday will remain executive committee and full board, except for certain months where holidays will get in the way of that. So don't always assume that just because it's one of the first three Thursdays of the month that there's going to be legislature meetings. Check on our website. We have it there. Social media, I have it set up as events there. And listen, if you miss one, you'll still be able to watch it online. And I say this every time, but I really think this is cool. I love that our video feed, once it's recorded, you can then click on what part of the agenda you want to hear more about, and it will start you at that point in the discussion in the video. You don't have to watch the whole video if you don't want to find what you're looking for.
Well, that's a nice feature.
It is.
Wow. Some good news here. There's been an infusion of $35 million into the HEAP program. So that means that the regular HEAP program is back. Last week, we talked about how it was only the emergency HEAP available. Now right. we have the regular HEAP available.
Let's emergency is still there too, of course. But yeah, regular HEAP is back, meaning you don't have to be suffering an emergency to apply for this. You could just apply. And if you're eligible from our income thresholds, which more people are than not, actually, I'm surprised how many people are eligible, but that's a good thing. We will give you a certain amount of money. We'll pay it directly to your fuel provider. Unless you pick up like pellets yourself or something, and then we'll get it to you. But typically we give it to the fuel provider that you have for your home energy. It has to be your primary home, not your business, not a second home, that kind of thing. But it is back available. The federal funding had run out, and we had only suddenly been notified of that a week ago. So that's why regular HEAP suddenly disappeared. But Governor Hochul said we can find $35 million out of the current state budget to fund this, to keep the regular HEAP benefit going. After those funds run out, I don't know that the regular HEAP will continue. So if you haven't yet applied and you want to apply, now is the time to do so.
Lake Superior season passes now available. This is looking ahead to the warmer weather.
Yes, I always like to have that in here. So we just started making these available. It's actually a great deal. It's $15 per person for a season pass, and contrast that with it costs $5 per person to get into Lake Superior State Park during the season. So if you're coming three or more times, you're going to be saving money here. Of course, this is a state park, but the county runs it, so that's why we're able to provide this. If you are looking for a seasonal pass to enjoy the swimming area, the sandy beach, we refresh the sand there, picnic areas, group picnic pavilions, boat rentals like paddle boats, or you can put in your own boat with an electric motor, a shower changing area, fishing, a volleyball net, playground, then you can contact our parks office. The application form is available right on the website if you go to sullivanny.gov and look up our parks page, or you can give a call directly to our parks office, 807-0287.
And back to the cold weather, though, Snow and W's Snowshoe Walk coming up in February. It looks like it'll be a good one this year with the snow that we've had.
Yeah.
And the cold weather.
Who needs to wait till the summer to get outside?
Right.
I know some of us don't like the cold, but that's what makes it so wonderful to ski, to sled, to snowshoe.
If you don't like a sandy beach.
Right. Well, I like that, but I also like snow. It has sometimes the same consistency if it's soft enough, right? Just colder on the skin. We have a Snow and W. It's called that because it's on the O&W, Ontario and Western Rail Trail, that we have going through the county. It's a snowshoe walk and hike. We are going to have it Saturday, February 22nd at 10:30 a.m. on the really cool section of the rail trail in Parksville. I don't know how many people have tried that out, but it's got a bridge. It goes behind Parksville's business district. It even has a waterfall that you can only see from the rail trail that sits really sandwiched in between what I would call New 17 and Old 17 in Parksville. And it takes you from one end of the trail to the other. You can probably do it in about half an hour or less. And why not do it with people that you'll enjoy being out with? This is being brought to you by the Sullivan O&W Rail Trail and the Town of Liberty. Again, it'll be Saturday, February 22nd at 10:30 a.m. 40 Main Street is the gathering place in Parksville. Snow and W, snowshoe walk and hike.
We are talking to Dan Hoost, Communications Director from Sullivan County Government. We'll take a quick break and come back with more. You're listening to Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from The Furniture Restore, located on Main Street in Jeffersonville, specializing in antique and vintage furniture, rugs, art, and lighting, because buying well-made and pre-owned is a better choice for the planet. Online at therestorejville.com. And from The River Reporter, the community newspaper serving four counties along the Delaware River in Pennsylvania and New York, riverreporter.com. And from listeners like you.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, experience the transformative possibilities of poetry with United States Poet Laureate Ada Limón. She's the author of six collections and one of Time Magazine's 12 Women of the Year for 2024. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
City Arts and Lectures, Sunday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
You You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. We're talking to Dan Hoost, Communications Director from Sullivan County Government, as we do every Friday. And last Friday, you gave us a few reminders. Always good to remind folks again about a few things that are going on. Charter Review Commission members are still being sought.
Yes, definitely looking for people who are interested in helping chart the future of Sullivan County government and how it is operated. This is a really cool opportunity. It comes every 10 years. The charter, which is basically like the constitution of the county, requires that every 10 years it be reviewed so that we can determine, are things working? Do we need to change some things in the charter? And so it's met now. What I think there's been three times that it's met. So this will be the fourth time that it meets. And legislators are really interested in getting some fresh faces, some people who have never served in any advisory committee role with the county. So they are asking for people to submit letters of interest. You can submit those to our clerk of the legislature, Anne Marie Martin. AnneMarie.Martin@SullivanNY.gov, or give them a call if you have questions, 807-0435, 807-0435, where you can ask some questions. But basically, this group is going to meet probably starting in June or July, and will meet for however long they feel necessary. It could be a few months, could be a year or two of usually nothing more than monthly meetings, if even that, and just sort of understanding how county government operates and does something in the charter need to be changed to make it more efficient and effective for taxpayers.
Also, discretionary funding applications being accepted. The legislature has a pool of money that they're able to hand out to qualified nonprofits that submit an application. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that process.
Yes. You don't have to be a big nonprofit. You don't have to be a tiny nonprofit. You just have to be a nonprofit that serves Sullivan County. Doesn't even have to be headquartered in Sullivan County, but as long as you serve Sullivan County. So if you know of somebody who's involved in this or you're involved in one, spread the word about that, because there's several hundred thousand dollars available to eligible local serving nonprofits that fit with the county's mission, which I think most of them do. And legislators are interested in hearing about what you're doing and seeing what you would like. And the application is available right on the main page, SullivanNY.gov. And while this is a rolling deadline, it'll continue to be awarded these funds until they're exhausted. I've been telling everyone, earlier is better than later. If you would like some money from the county government at the discretion of the legislature, that's why it's called discretionary, put in your application so they can review it early on.
What is the amount in that pool that's available? What are we talking about?
There's over $400,000 available. I don't think any single award gets up into the $100,000 range. Most of them are between $1,000 and $80,000 kind of thing. But ask for what you're looking for. And I tell people, always ask for more maybe than you'll expect that you get, because then you can have a good dialogue with legislators about it that, listen, we'd like this. And maybe they say, well, we'll give you maybe half that or two thirds of that or something. So it's a really great thing that we do. It makes a world of difference in local nonprofits. I can speak about several who have benefited from this and really find this money valuable in furthering their mission, which is also furthering the county's mission.
Can you give us an example of one of those then?
The Delaware Valley Arts Alliance.
I thought you might say that.
Yes. They get funding
on whose board you serve,
As a disclaimer there. I'm not involved in asking for the money, though. I very much keep the line drawn in the sand there between my role in the county and my role in the DVAA. The people who will be asking for that will not be me, but I can speak to how it's used. It's used to afford grants to other artists and arts organizations. So in essence, we're re-granting the money that has been given to the DVAA. And it's just a wonderful way, and something we couldn't do without that funding. So we make sure that we apply every year. We have to. It's not an automatic guarantee. Legislators will make the ultimate decision.
And another reminder about Move Sullivan. We were telling folks about the new hour-long bus loops running in Liberty and Monticello. Mm-hmm. They've been added.
Yeah, this is really exciting news. Just when I think we've expanded Move Sullivan, our public bus transportation system, as far as I think we're going to, we expand further. I know sometimes our community resources commissioner, Laura Quigley, is like, why did I do that? Because she really puts it all together with our contractor, Rolling V. But she has a passion for the community being served and is seeing just how much an impact this is making on people who otherwise would not have transportation or would have to take some form of paid transportation, like an Uber or something, to get just to work or the doctor's office. We had more people back in the day who were locals using our taxis, I think, than we had actually tourists. So that indicated there was a need for mass transit. And of course, it's a more sustainable way of doing things. Well, now we have these hour-long loops in downtown Monticello and Liberty, where if you just want to get across town, you don't have to do the still existing larger loops that take maybe 2 or more hours to get from point A to point B. And hopefully in about a month's time, I will be talking about our new route that we are just about getting ready to open that will serve Parksville, Livingston Manor, Roscoe, Calicoon Center, Jeffersonville, Youngsville, and White Sulphur Springs. That'll be the new Route E.
And before we go, we want to recognize Nancy Buck and the County Treasurer's Office. They've again earned yet another award. I was saying that Nancy's like the Meryl Streep of treasurers here. What's this award?
And she actually carries on a tradition that even predates her. This is the 34th consecutive time. 34th. And she has not been treasurer for 34 years. I'm sure she'd want me to say that. That the treasurer's office has been accorded the Financial Reporting Achievement Award from the Government Finance Officers Association. The GFOA, for short, is a national nonprofit association serving around 21,000 government finance professionals with offices in Chicago and Washington. Basically, they're the big trade organization for government finance officers. So this award means a lot. It's the highest award that they give. It was given after a panel of judges determined the county's 2023 annual comprehensive financial report met GFOA's high standards, including demonstrating a constructive spirit of full disclosure, meaning that we were being very transparent in how we were putting this information out to the public. And you can see it. It's available under the treasurer's website. If you look under audits at sullivanny.gov, you can read it there. You have to, you know, have some understanding of math and numbers. So if you do, you'll be better at it than me. Sometimes I read it and like, I get that it's transparent, but I want it in words, not numbers. But really, honestly, this is a top award. They should be very proud of this. It does not get old for them, even though it's been 34 years. She gave particular thanks to her deputy county treasurer, Kathleen Lara, and also her senior fiscal administrator, Shannon Armbrust, who really, with the staff, put all this together. She basically says, they make me look good. And this being her last year before she retires.
Nice way to go out.
It really is a nice way for her to go out. And it's good for taxpayers to know that we are trying to take care of their money in the most responsible way. And an impartial national panel of judges agrees.
Dan Hoos, Sullivan County Government Communications Director, thank you so much for being here. We'll see you next Friday.
Thanks for always having me.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk to the president of the New York Immigration Coalition about President Donald Trump's new executive orders aimed at immigration policy. This is Radio Chatskill.
I'm Jason Tuga, host of The Mixtape. Every Friday night, it's my goal to bring WJFF listeners great music. Music from all over the world. Stuff that's been lost in the archives and needs to be heard. Classics you already knew you loved. And new stuff from established and emerging artists. All right here on The Mixtape, WJFF Radio Catskill.
Friday night at 7 on Radio Catskill.
This is Ari Shapiro with NPR. If you've been thinking about helping this station with a contribution, but now is not the right time for a financial gift, you can donate a vehicle you don't need. Pickup is free, and it could be worth hundreds of dollars in support. Think about it, and thanks.
We accept any vehicle, running or not, including cars, trucks, boats, RVs, motorcycles, and more. Donate at WJFFradio.org.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. President Donald Trump has signed a slew of executive orders aimed at immigration policy. This week, there were several reports of ICE raids and arrests in major cities across the country, including New York City, and even in rural New York State and Greene County. Yesterday, we spoke to rural and migrant ministries to understand the impact of the executive orders. Today, we talked to the president and CEO of the New York Immigration Coalition to understand the legal challenges ahead and the state's role in protecting immigrants. Chantal Destra of the New York Public News Network sat down with Murad Awadeh, president and CEO of the New York Immigration Coalition.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today, Murad.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Now, under a recent executive order, President Donald Trump has moved to end birthright citizenship. Now, I wanted to get your reaction to this measure as someone who understands the struggles of immigrant communities in New York.
Well, as you know, President Trump was just elected recently, but inaugurated on Monday and immediately signed a slew of executive orders and actions that were straight up anti-immigrant. None of them were to actually make America safer. And in this moment, what we're seeing is even with the birthright citizenship executive action, a judge just less than 24 hours ago put a nationwide injunction on it saying that it is unconstitutional. So a lot of these actions we believe are unconstitutional, and we're waiting to see how they come out of how the court system processes them in this moment.
Yeah, as you mentioned, the federal judge temporarily blocked that executive order. So are there any plans for the New York Immigration Coalition to be involved with or assist in any legal challenges to this measure?
Yeah, so we're assessing the executive orders currently. And, you know, we've already filed with our national partners, the National Immigration Law Center, Freedom of Information request on the rescission of the sensitive locations directive to understand what decision-making thoughts went into that so that we have a better understanding of what's happening within the Department of Homeland Security in this moment. And we are assessing which other executive actions we are going to take action on. Additionally, we're working at the local level here across the state, as well at the state level, to actually protect and defend our communities, which is why we're fighting for the New York for All Act, which would say that the state of New York will not invest any resources to collude with immigration enforcement and collude with family separation and harming our communities and our local economies, as well as fighting for additional immigration legal services funding of $165 million to make sure that people aren't going up against a government-trained prosecutor and judge whose sole job is to remove them from this country.
And in addition to that executive order, the president also signed an order stripping churches and schools of immigration enforcement protection. So can you help us put that into context? What do you think the implications of a measure like this will be? And we'll get into, of course, your state efforts after.
The rescission of the sensitive locations memo is just heartless. It is trying to inflict even more fear and chaos in communities across the state of New York and this country. I think whenever anyone thinks of safe haven or a place where you will be safe is a hospital or your school or your place of faith. And that memo pretty much said that ICE will not operate in those spaces. But this administration is, again, not leaning into the safety and security of our country. They're leaning into cruelty. And that's the point of this, is when they rescinded that, they're saying, we're going after everyone everywhere, regardless of, you know, your sensibilities or your where you think you may be safe. We're coming for you everywhere. And that's just gutless and heartless in this moment.
And from your purview, what role should New York and the legislature play in sort of combating these efforts and protecting the rights and freedoms of immigrants while this is a federal, measure?
Well, as you know, New York has been known to lead in the nation, and we're looking to New York to lead again. We need the state legislator and the governor to lead in this moment in helping us pass the New York for All Act, which would stop the state from using any of its resources to collude with family separation harming our communities and gutting our local economies. New York for All Act will ensure that New Yorkers feel safe in the state of New York, that their state is not harming them. Additionally, we're fighting for increased resources for legal services of $165 million to ensure that people in deportation proceedings get the help that they need. They're going up against government-trained prosecutors and judges whose sole job is to remove them from this country. And what we do know is that our community's contributions are huge here in the state of New York, contributing over $68 billion in combined taxes to the state, having the spending power of $150 to $200 billion. Those are not little numbers. Those are not, you know, minuscule impacts that we are going to not feel. Every aspect of life here in New York is touched by an immigrant one way or the other, from our food being, planted, picked, stocked in stores and sold in immigrant small businesses. These are all things that continue to nourish not just us individually, but our state. To our healthcare workers who are a majority who are immigrants, these are attacks on every single aspect of life here in New York. And we need the state of New York to fight back against this mass deportation plan.
And from a legal perspective, if these measures go unchecked, what will be the long-term implications for immigrants around the country and here in New York?
Well, the executive actions are, the president's executive actions are being checked and they are being litigated in this moment. So we'll see how the court process proceeds. We're already seeing good indications that, as we thought, some of these actions are unconstitutional. But what we do need is leaders to stand up and to fight back. We need our political leaders to stand up and fight back. If not, we're going to have real serious problems on our hands, like in a state like New York, where 1/4 of our population is immigrant, where 5 million workers in the state are immigrants. And we can't live without immigrants. New York has been built by every wave of immigrants and will continue to. There is no New York without immigrant New York. So it's really important that our state leaders stand up and fight back in this moment, to fight for families, to fight for our communities, and to fight for everything that we love about our state.
And we did some reporting recently on some state policies to help immigrant communities, such as the New York for All Act, which you mentioned, the Dignity Not Detention Act, and the Legal Representation Act. Now, can you start by telling us how these policies could potentially help immigrant communities this year? And also, I wanted to get into some of the strategy that you'll be putting forth this session, as I know these aren't necessarily new policy issues that you're taking up.
Yeah, the New York for All Act is pretty simple. It says that the state of New York will not use any of its resources to collude with immigration enforcement, because that's a federal responsibility, not the state's. It also says that we are not going to collude with the separation of family and the harming of communities. And I think that is the floor. And that's why we are asking that our state legislative leaders, our assembly members, our senators, and our governors step up and support it so that it actually becomes the law of the land. What we're seeing already within the first week of this administration is massive fear happening. We've already seen raids happening across the state of New York, and that is going to only get worse. We need the state to step in and say, we are not going to participate in this, and we are going to protect our New Yorkers. The Dignity Not Detention Act would actually prohibit the use of jails for immigration detention. And what we're going to start seeing is that the Trump administration is going to start looking for ways to detain people and leave them in jail, regardless of whatever the issue may be that put them there to begin with. So we should not be using our state's infrastructure to support the mass deportation apparatus that's being built right now. And then the Access to Representation Act is just that. It's saying that in the criminal justice system, you have a right to an attorney, but in our immigration system, we do not. So we want to make sure that people who are going up against a government-trained prosecutor and a judge whose sole job is to remove you from this country, that you have the support of an attorney who's going to help you navigate your case And what we've seen is that people with immigration lawyers actually have a 10 times more likelihood of winning their case and being able to stay with their families and in their communities in New York.
And from your purview, will these policies be enough to help address challenges on the federal level?
They will be enough to protect New Yorkers from the federal government that is only seeking to sow more chaos and cruelty across our country. So it is our responsibility as New Yorkers to stand up and fight for one another and to fight for the dignity and respect that we believe everyone deserves.
And what do you make of the argument from Republicans here in Albany that the focus for the legislature should be on New Yorkers and they shouldn't be allocating resources to immigrants?
Well, immigrants are New Yorkers, so we should be allocating resources to all New Yorkers. So I agree with them. We should be allocating resources to all New Yorkers and making sure that they are not just barely surviving, but that they are thriving, which is why we are supporting and leading the campaign for the Working Families Tax Credit, which would give families the credit that they deserve and also put more money in the pockets of parents. And we look forward to everyone, including the gentleman who made that comment, to support the Working Families Tax Credit, which would give families at least $1,600 per child in the state of New York, a tax credit, which will go a huge way to helping families really be able to make ends meet. Everyone is hurting right now. And people have been hurting for over 6 years at this point with the affordability crisis. And that's the irony of the moment we're living in. Is that when you look at every single exit poll during the presidential election that just happened, the top issue in that exit poll is affordability and the economy. The top issue by far in every single exit poll. And instead of addressing that, what we see is the Trump administration coming in and trying to create a deeper affordability crisis by harming immigrants across this country. It does not make any sense. Instead of actually trying to relieve the pressure on the American people, what we're seeing is that the pressure is about to get turned up higher.
And lastly, what do you want New Yorkers to know or understand about what is going on at the federal level and how it might affect them?
I think all New Yorkers should know that this administration has already come in attacking people's constitutional rights. And there is a saying that if they are not coming for you right now, they will come for you next. And that's exactly what is going to continue to happen. So that's why it's important for everyone to stand up and voice their concern, reach out to their congressional members and lodge their concerns with them as well to make sure that they hear them, that they understand that they are against these attacks on New Yorkers and that we are going to fight for one another. Because if we don't fight for one another, no one's going to be fighting for us when it's our turn.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
And we were speaking with Morad Awade, president and CEO of the New York Immigration Coalition.
And thanks to Chantel Destra of the New York Public News Network for that conversation. We'll take a break. And when we come back, Indigenous rights advocate Leonard Peltier will be honored at a community celebration this weekend. We'll learn more after a break. This is Radio Chatskill.
On last week's Wait, Wait, Paula Poundstone reacted to a suggestion that a great way to meet the locals while traveling is to go to McDonald's.
I mean, if you're really trying to meet the locals, why not go to their DMV?
I'm Peter Sagal. If you want to get the pulse of this country, tune into this week's news quiz with special guest taxidermist to the stars, Amber Maycutt. Get stuffed with Wait, Wait from NPR.
Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
Hi there, this is Brian, host of The Secret Show, Friday nights at 9. I'll be playing a mix of indie, alternative, college, rock, and pop, some new music, and some old classics. That's The Secret Show, Friday nights at 9, only on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Leonard Peltier, the Indigenous activist whose sentence was commuted by former President Biden on January 19th, won't be relocated to house arrest until next month. But a local celebration to commemorate his clemency will take place this Sunday in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Peltier, who was active in the American Indian movement, was sentenced to life in prison after the murders of two FBI agents in 1975 at the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. Peltier and his supporters maintained his innocence, although he did admit that he was present during the shootout. Sunday celebration will feature one of Peltier's former lawyers, Sheila Duggan of Milanville, Pennsylvania, as the guest of honor. Radio Catskill's Miguel Santiago Colon spoke with her about her long quest for justice for Peltier.
50 years after being sentenced to life in prison for the deaths of two FBI agents in 1975, Leonard Peltier will be relocated to home confinement after having his sentence commuted by former President Biden. And although he won't be relocated until February 18 at most, an event is already scheduled to celebrate his clemency after decades of grassroots efforts in his favor. The event will have Sheila Duggan as a guest of honor. She worked as Peltier's lawyer 30 years ago. Now in her 80s, Duggan shared with me that she's ready to finally see him in person.
I just cried. It was so touching. It was just so touching. I mean, you know, and why he did it? Why did Biden lose his sentence? Because he was leaving. He was leaving office. He decided to do this as his last thing, just to show Trump that he could do it. You know, and. Even good for him.
She reacted that way while recounting the time she heard of Peltier's commutation, something that's been fought for by Native American activists, communities, and organizations since he was imprisoned. Duggan, on her behalf, was involved in the judicial process and with filing court motions for him for 2 years. Biden's commutation came after many efforts to sway sitting presidents for it, including Barack Obama and Bill Clinton. Duggan also mentioned that the decision came at a time while Peltier's health was declining.
I was a lawyer at the time, and I had my own practice. So I decided to investigate the trial of Leonard Peltier, which I was curious about. So I went to see him in Florida, in prison, and we talked for, I would say 2 years. You know, I knew him for about 2 years and talked to Dick, wrote motions for him, and they were all denied. It was really important. And everybody was signing, you know, papers and asking, I think, 5 presidents over the 50 years. And nobody did anything except Biden. And it was just really touching. I don't know how Leonard heard about it, you know, how he felt when he heard about it. It must have touched him really a lot. You know, he's not well. He's not well at all. And he was 30 years old when I met him. I mean, in his 30s, not 30, but, you know, close to sure 30. And so was I. And now he's old, very old. He's 80 years old now and has rheumatism and just one thing after another. And he was interviewed and he was just not well at all and hurting and just, you know, he's not going to be well.
As part of Biden's commutation, Peltier will be transferred to house arrest scheduled tentatively for next month. However, his clemency celebrations will take place this weekend. The potluck brunch will be held this Sunday from 12:30 to 4 in the afternoon at the Damascus Manor Community Center in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Although Duggan has not spoken with Leonard Peltier ever since handling the case, this is what she said when I asked her if she wanted to send him a message.
Oh, I would tell him, congratulations, Leonard. I knew you'd make it. Let's see. I hope to see you someday soon. We both made it. Yes, I've got this painting. Leonard did that in prison. You know, he still paints. And he did that and he gave it to me as a thank you for me. So I was really pleased with that. And I brought it here to just show you what it is. And I'll bring that to the gathering.
Peltier's celebration this Sunday will be free, and guests are encouraged to bring a dish for the potluck. In Liberty, I'm Miguel Santiago Colon for Radio Catskill.
We have a picture of Sheila holding that painting at our website, wjffradio.org. We'll take a break, and when we come back, the activities at the E.B. Crawford Public Library in Monticello to celebrate and recognize Black History Month. This is Radio Chatskill.
This week on Science Friday, what samples from the asteroid Bennu are telling us about the origin of life. Plus, scientists have figured out how to make RNA glow like a firefly.
Anytime you have a tool, a molecular tool that lets you visualize something fundamental, we can then use that as a tool to build better vaccines.
That's on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Today, from 2 to 4 p.m. on Radio Catskill.
You're with Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, tomorrow's February, believe it or not, and it's Black History Month. The E.B. Crawford Public Library is celebrating with a variety of activities for children and families. From scavenger hunts to story times, the library is offering some educational ways for kids to learn more about important African-American figures and history. Today, we're joined by Brittany Herring, the children's library clerk, and learning more about these events and how families can take part in celebrating Black History Month at the E.B. Crawford Library in Monticello. Good morning, Brittany.
Good morning. How are you?
We're good, thanks. How are you? I know you guys are on a bit of a delay this morning because of the weather. What time are you guys opening up this morning?
I believe we're opening at 11 this morning, but we want to make sure everyone makes it safely. So we're taking our time and making sure everyone has access to all our information and knowledge.
Yep. And giving you a chance to talk to us, too, right now about Black History Month at the library. Why is it important for you guys to celebrate Black History Month at the E.B. Crawford Library?
It's very important, especially in the department I work in, the children's department, making sure they have the information and knowledge of the African-American and Black people that has contributed to, quote unquote, regular history. We want to make sure it's a part of regular history and make sure they know.
Right. One of the highlights is a special reading of Langston Hughes' poetry that's presented by Oliver King. Tell us a little bit about that and why you chose this particular poetry and this particular figure to feature.
I believe the Oliver King reading is for the adult. In general, I think it's very important to know the contributions that Langston Hughes has given us, especially during the Harlem Renaissance. He is a huge influence in that. And I think everyone should know, no matter if you are African American or not.
And for the kids, we've got some things that engaged those young minds, activities like interactive scavenger hunts and, of course, some story times. And these feature some lesser known but inspiring Black historical figures. Tell us a little bit about these figures and why you chose to highlight maybe some lesser known figures instead of maybe some of the more, you know, usual ones, I would say.
Yeah, while trying to put something together, we always choose Martin Luther King, Rosa Parks, great, great individuals to know about, but it becomes repetitive to the point where I kind of was thinking, hey, let's get more people out there. Let them know there's more people that contributed to everyday life. Like for the first half of the scavenger hunt, we're doing historical figures. A woman that I hold near and dear, Madam C.J. Walker. I know not a lot of people know about her. Langston Hughes, we know a bit, but I don't think kids know really about him. And Garrett Morgan, the traffic light. There was pure chaos before he inserted that yellow light. So it was very important to me to let the kids know, hey, Black and African-American people have made major contributions to everyday life.
Yeah, and when you talk about Madam C.J. Walker, you know, she was an American entrepreneur and philanthropist and is recorded as the first female self-made millionaire in all of America. So that's interesting to present to children who may just not know that history.
Yes, started out with hair products and services, and being that she was going through some hair and scalp issues, she, under someone else's mentorship, she developed these products and became a millionaire soon after.
And for story time, what are some of the books you're going to be reading for Black History Month for the kids for story time during the month?
So for story time, I wanted to highlight more people that's current. And I chose, we're going to read about Alma Thomas, who was very big in the abstract art world. We have Savion Glover, great tap dancer. Still alive today, doing such an amazing job, and just going over some of the African folk tales and African American folk tales. I think it would be really great to introduce the kids to Anansi, the god of tricks and stories. So that's where we're heading towards. We'll have more books. We'll have activities, songs. And even color and cheese. We're going to have a party, I promise.
Well, good on you. Good on you for recognizing some other folks contributing to the greatness of African American history. You know, like Alma Thomas. I mean, I know that's a story time for kids, but maybe I'll show up and learn more about her contribution as well. Tell folks where they can learn more about all these events that you've got coming up throughout the month.
You can go to the Ethelbert B. Crawford Library, go to our calendar, and for each month we will have all of our events. If it's on our calendar and you do not have to register, just walk on in at that time and we will greet you, maybe have a couple stickers for you. But some of our programs you do have to register, so I would say register in time. That way we can make sure we have enough fun stuff for everyone.
And you don't have to know how to spell Ethelbert. You can go to ebcpl.org to learn more. That's the library's website. We've been talking with Brittany Herring, the children's library clerk at the E.B. Crawford Library, Public Library in Monticello, about Black History Month this February. Thank you so much, Brittany. And looks like you've got about 4 minutes before we're opening up after that weather delay, so we'll let you go.
Yes. No problem. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too. That'll do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. A reminder that you can sign up for our weekly newsletter at our website. It comes out every Friday, so if you didn't get it today, that means you haven't signed up. Go to our website, wjffradio.org. Sign up, get it in your inbox every Friday morning, and keep up with all the news and events here at Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale. Dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour, Bill Gates on dinner at Mar-a-Lago.
President Trump, you know, is going to make a lot of policy decisions. And I would say the range of possibilities in many areas has never been as broad.
Bill Gates on the politics of technology in 2025. Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour. Listen Sunday at 6 for the New Yorker Radio Hour on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's weather, there's a weather advisory, winter weather advisory in effect until 1 this afternoon. We might still see some freezing rain, additional ice accumulations too, around light glaze, according to the National Weather Service. That's for Sullivan, Delaware, and central New York counties until 1 o'clock. There could be some slippery sidewalks, roads, and bridges as well. So slow down and use caution while traveling. The freezing rain turned rain this afternoon. Temperatures nearly steady in the mid-30s. Tonight, cloudy with occasional rains, mainly this evening, low around 20. And tomorrow, some clouds in the morning, giving way to mainly sunny skies for the afternoon. A morning high of 24 with temperatures falling to near 15 tomorrow. and winds up to 25 miles an hour. Force tomorrow night, it's going to be a low of 7. Cold still on Sunday, 25 with some snow possible up to an inch. But on Monday, looks like it's going to be a high of 43 and a chance of an evening rain or snow shower.
There are two American folk singers that even people who hate folk music know, and one of them is Woody Guthrie. His guitar was labeled "This Machine Kills Fascists," and that symbolizes the themes of his music. Next time on The Wuggle Headed Monkeys with me, Graham Rice, here on Radio Catskill, we'll hear British and Irish covers of songs by Woody Guthrie. Join me, please, on Sunday afternoon at 3.
I'm Thane Peterson. Join me for great music from the newest artists with a little bit of classic jazz from the greats of the past thrown into the mix. Living Jazz, Saturday at noon, only on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.